quick heads up before we start. I'll be hosting a webinar on using AI to boost your LinkedIn profile. The best part? The webinar is free. If you want to know how to take your LinkedIn profile into all-star status, getting the attention that you want, pivoting careers, telling the story that you want to be told, join me at this webinar where I'm going to be showing you three killer strategies to make your professional presence pop. You can find the registration link in the show notes. And don't forget to follow me on LinkedIn. Connect with me there if you would like. And my other social media platforms. And I've got a newsletter now. So be sure to sign up for the newsletter to not miss out on any offerings at yumiwilson.me. Now, let's get going. Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism, from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism. What if there was a platform that could revolutionize journalism, combat disinformation, and empower independent reporters all at once? Today, we're digging into exactly that with our guest, Kiva Donnelly, the CEO of Legitimate.net. So I'm very excited to have Kiva. She has been tackling some of the biggest headaches that journalists have. We're going to find out about her journey from teacher to tech innovator, and we're going to break down Legitimate's mission and see how these tools are giving independent journalists and small newsrooms a real chance at success. Kiva, welcome to our show.
Hi, Yumi. Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to start with your journey. Reading about you and the interviews you've done and the presentations you've given, I've definitely been inspired. My background is also in teaching, but your journey from teaching kids to running a tech company is amazing. Can you walk us through that transformation, how it all started, and then how journalism became the key issue for you?
It has been an absolutely crazy journey. I started my career in education. I was a pre-K teacher. I did that for almost 20 years altogether, going from teacher to senior leader in the school to eventually like being at the very head of the school. I have my professional qualification in headship. I have a master's in education, and I always felt like my career would be in education. Thought I would eventually transition from the classroom into a university and then educate upcoming teachers is how I thought the journey was going to go. And then COVID happened and everything sort of changed. I was teaching in a school in a very, very disadvantaged area. COVID was very, very concerning for me because I knew that the children that were coming to me relied basically on the school for food, for hygiene, everything. We did their hairs, we brushed their teeth, everything. And when that was removed during COVID, it was very, very concerning. It sort of changed my view of what I could do in the classroom as well. And then I think really it was a lot on me emotionally and mentally too, that I just felt like the classroom was really not the place for me anymore. And that some new, fresh, energized, young teachers could come in and take over that. And at the same time, then myself and my husband, who is the co-founder and CTO of Legitimate, had started looking at this idea. It was initially something to do with disinformation. We were looking into how you could combat disinformation. Neither of us have a background in journalism. We don't have friends or family, or we didn't at that time have friends or family who were journalists. We've now become friends, really good friends with a lot of journalists. The two things happened at the same time. So that was just how I started into legitimate and into starting to build the company.
That is an exciting transformation, if you will. That word is overused, I know, but you're saying that you and your husband, Gerard, have no experience in journalism, but clearly you have kind of a dedication, a commitment to it. What did you see was wrong in journalism at that time that inspired you to go after this mission?
Yeah, so we actually came at it from the other side. Initially, we were looking as consumers of news. We were looking at family members who were consuming news that was very misinformed. They were going down rabbit holes of disinformation. We had very good friends of ours that got caught in really bad places online. And we thought, well, something has to be done here. Obviously, we knew that fact-checking was taking place at that time, and it is extremely valuable. But in the situations that we were looking at, there was nobody coming to us after sharing links with us, you know, 2 weeks later to say, actually, they've been fact-checked and they're not correct. So, you know, the fact-checking has to take place, but it wasn't taking place immediately. There was no way for it to be happening as the links were being shared. So we tried to think of a way that we could tackle that. Gerard is very, very technical. He's a problem solver. He just has an engineering brain. And he came up with the idea that if you could see who the source of that information was before you clicked on the link, that you could make a better decision about whether you were even going to click on it or interact with the article or the piece of content. So that's where we started. It was from the sort of other side of the equation, looking as a news consumer and what we could do to help people like make better decisions basically around stories they were seeing online. When we got into that, then obviously we started speaking with journalists to see if this would be an interesting tool. And that opened up a whole other can of worms of issues they were experiencing.
I can only imagine that the journalists that you talked to said, yes, we need this immediately. How do we make this happen?
Yeah, there was a lot of interest in it. What we also found then was that there were other issues that journalists were having, just really with technology that wasn't really being developed for them. They were trying to fit other pieces of technology into their day rather than technology being built for them. And we thought, well, if we want to get journalists on board in order to combat disinformation and do what we want to do, why not incentivize them by building all these tools? Again, Jared is a technical genius, so he can just whip things up, and he was able to build out this whole suite of tools. Then we sat down with a number of the journalists who had been really supportive of us from the start and said to them, okay, you'll open your laptop in the morning. What do you do? Every pain point, every blocker, tell us what they are, and we will see if we can establish a fix for them. And that's how we built out the tool suite.
That leads me to, let's talk about legitimate. First of all, the name. It's funny because, you know, when I'm teaching, a lot of times I'll say to students, let's look for legitimate sources of information. So you had mentioned the major pain points for journalists and newsroom. How is that platform fixing these pain points or issues? First, let's start with the mission of Legitimate. Let's get into the details.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, the name was very brave of us. We wanted to be the place for legitimate sources. You know, is this a legitimate journalist? And we thought, well, if we're called legitimate, then all of our journalists are, you know, legitimate journalists. They're part of the platform. So we were brave with the name. I think when you're starting a company and when you have such a big vision and a really strong mission, you can be brave because we really do believe it. So we thought we will take the name and we'll just go with it. And yeah, I think it is funny because when you're talking to people about sources, we would do a lot of trainings on disinformation and, you know, you're talking about the legitimate sources and then there's always a chuckle or a giggle in the class, you know, because we have chosen that name. So yeah, the name was a brave choice, but I think it does stand to what we're trying to do. The mission behind the company really has evolved from providing transparency around sourcing, which is still front and center. You know, it is still one of the key things that we're working on. But it has evolved to include then helping journalism to thrive. We have gotten so ingrained in this space now. We have made so many friends within the industry. We've been working with really small, hyper-local newsrooms, really small local newsrooms, non-profit newsrooms, you know, newsrooms that represent underrepresented communities. And we've really built on our mission to just support them and enable them with the technology that will then help them to thrive and keep getting stronger. Because we just really do believe that every community deserves a news source that is reputable, that they can rely on, and that journalism really does touch on every aspect of society. So it is such an important thing that we really didn't know before we got into the industry. We didn't understand the critical role that it plays.
So walk me through, if someone wants to sign up, how do they do it? Where do they go?
There are a lot of tools, because what we have done is over the last 4 years, we've been working on this. So we have built out tools based on what our newsrooms and our journalists need. So just as an example, over the last couple of months, we built out a feature for journalists to be able to download their archive of work. And that was in a response, direct response to journalists being laid off, the website coming down, and them losing everything. So if you have a profile on our system, then you can go in and download your whole archive, and you'll have it there as PDF or in Word format, so that no matter what happens, you will have that work. It's your work. You should always have it. So that's just how we've built out all of the tools. And that's how we've ended up with a whole range of tools, because when our newsrooms need something, if we can do it, we'll do it. But just to answer your question there, in order to sign up to the platform, you just get onto legitimate.net and sign up, and it's free. Most of our tools are free. We have got a premium plan which offers like 10 hours of transcription and additional AI and different bits and pieces. But we wanted to make sure that a lot of our tools were free and will always be free, so that that's not a barrier, because a lot of budgets, small newsrooms don't have huge budgets. Journalists don't have huge budgets.
I was just about to ask about cost, because I have been signing up for numerous tools to, you know, level up, if you will, and learn about tools that can help me be more productive and all of those things. But many of those tools come with a cost. So how do you do it? How do you create a program that is free?
We've been really, really scrappy as a startup, and I think this could be a bit controversial, but some platforms or products are there to make an awful, awful lot of money. We are not trying to extort journalists. We're not trying to squeeze every penny out of them. Obviously, we want to be a profitable company, but we're not trying to take everything we can. And the whole approach that we've had is that we have all these free tools. We also have run grant programs as well for smaller newsrooms to give them access to the premium tools for free as well. But then we have enterprise clients that pay for additional things like custom voices for their audio or custom style guides within their editorial review feature or custom CMS integrations, whatever it is. But the model that we've used is the people that can pay, pay, so that the people that can't pay don't have to. We don't want to close the door on anyone because they can't afford the tools. And we've actually tried to remove some costs from newsrooms. Like, we give every journalist 3 hours of transcription for free every month. So if you were paying another service for your transcription, you can now cut that cost. And you can use that money then to get your journalists out into the field or get them some protective equipment or, you know, send them on a trip or whatever it is, you know. So we've actually tried to not only add value with the tools, but also cut some costs where we can too.
Wow. Let's say I've signed up, but I still haven't used the tools. Are there credentials that I have to show? How do you discern whether someone is working in journalism, or is there that discernment?
So every journalist that signs up independently that we haven't spoken with yet, so if we've spoken with someone, we can verify them. If we have a partnership with a newsroom, we can verify you through your newsroom. We've got loads of different ways that we do that with partners. But if you're just an independent signing up and I've never spoken to you before, you just sign up, and then if you want to publish your profile, You can use your tools for free. You don't have to do anything special to use the tools. But if you want to have a published profile, so if you want your profile to appear on the website, which will then link in with that disinformation tool and show who you are as a journalist, then you have to go through some ID verification. But in order to use the tools, if you're just in the back end of the site, that's fine. You can just go ahead and use them.
So a lot of people who are curious can learn about the tools.
Yeah, and that's also what we wanted to do with our AI tools. We wanted them to be sitting in there, like there's 14 different AI tools. You can have all of them for a week for free, but then we cut them down to four. But there's still four AI tools there that you can be experimenting with without having really to do anything, because we wanted people to be able to get in there and poke around with AI and see if it works for you, because it won't work for everybody and everybody doesn't want to use it. But to be able to actually get in and use something that's been built specifically for the industry, I think is important too, without having to outlay all these different costs.
That's great. Now you have the universal bio, and that sounds, at least to me, like a game changer.
Yeah. So that's the initial thing that we started out with. That's what we started the whole company for. And over the last year, we have been able to gain a lot of traction with it again. We had sort of not shelved it, it was always there, but we had pivoted into the tool suite more, building out the tools more, engaging newsrooms more. Then we went into the AI space and started building out those tools. But over the last year, with it being such a huge election year globally, so many people voting this year, the bio became more important again. So we were able to build out relationships with some government bodies. So we have a really strong partnership with the EU. We're part of their code of practice on disinformation. We've been involved in all of their election groups and all around the bio, and the same with the Australian government. So the bio is basically what I was speaking about at the start. What we wanted to do was show who the author of content is, no matter where that content is shared. So when a journalist signs up for the platform and then they go through the ID verification, they can publish their profile. And then that profile is what we use to sort of integrate that universal bio across the internet. So it means anywhere that a link that you have written is shared, whether it's you that shared it or your next door neighbor or someone down the road or some random person on Facebook, whatever it is, anywhere that link appears, we can pop up a little card, and it's like a playing card. It looks like a playing card, and it shows the author's image. It shows where they have been published. It shows, you know, any accreditations, affiliations they might have, links to their social platforms if they want that included, and then some of their latest content, so that you can then, as a user, as a news consumer, you can see, this is the journalist, this is what else they've written. Will I now click on this link? And we're in discussions with many of the main social media platforms to integrate this tool.
That's pretty amazing, because, you know, and I'm just thinking about, you know, many of the major AI tools like ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini and so on, you know, you look up information on fill in the blank, and it is so hard to find the original source of information. So if I were to have a journalist, you know, has the bio, has filled out everything on legitimate.com, would that information be discovered on ChatGPT, for example?
So that's where we are right now. They have to integrate it. That's what we're pushing forward right now. We are in talks with many of the major platforms. The governmental partnerships are helping us on that side too. But the bio is an absolute game changer if the big tech platforms and the AI companies accept it. If they don't accept it, there's no way for us to make it work. They have to integrate it. So that's what we're currently working on. And we have a number of really big publishers that have onboarded as well, which we're hoping will leverage them a little bit more. Any help on that side? Any of your listeners that can push that forward for us? It would be really, really helpful, because there's a tool sitting there. A lot of those companies are saying, yes, we're doing everything we can. We're trying our best. We have a tool and it's right there and it's ready. So if they were to integrate it, it would fix the issue with citations within the AI models. And attribution within AI models, as well as then across social media platforms, anywhere basically you see content links, our bio could be appearing.
Do you hear that, listeners? We have this opportunity. So if you know of someone or you know how there can be an effort to integrate this great tool into the AI tools that many of us use and many people use for information, is a great effort that's underway. I have noticed certain AI tools. I've been using Monica lately, and they are doing more with listing sources. So it does seem like the industry, the larger industry, if you will, they're starting to pick up cues that, yes, people want a lot of information. They want accurate information, but they also want to know where it comes from. So it seems like that is starting to happen. So let's talk a little bit more about fake news. It is a massive problem, and it is a globally massive problem, especially during election years, as we've seen internationally. How has Legitimate jumped into that fight? You've talked about a little bit, but you know, how do you stay on top of that?
It's a huge, huge problem across the globe. We see in elections already, Nigeria's elections were severely impacted by local news sites that popped up and were just spreading disinformation. See it again in, I think it was Pakistan's election, was riddled with fake news. I think every election that has happened across the world has had fake news and disinformation, misinformation impacted. So it is something that has to be tackled, and to stay on top of it is a real joint effort. That was what was really, really nice about working with the EU in their code of practice on disinformation. The group there is very different. There's different organizations all working together. So you had all of the major tech platforms represented. Then you had a lot of fact checkers. You had people working in civic organizations. There were different groups that were all trying to help each other. And that joined up approach, I think, is the only approach. Nobody can do this on their own. And even within the fact checking space in that EU group, there was numerous fact checkers from different countries or from different communities that were all coming together to try and tackle it, because no one group can do it all. The people that are out there trying to spread mis and disinformation are really highly technical. There is a huge effort on their side. So we need to have a huge effort on our side too. So I think it's getting different people represented, different groups, different types of technology, but all with humans at the center, sitting in a room discussing, what did you find? What have you seen? And how is this all working? What can we do next?
Speaking of stakeholders, Legitimate has teamed up, I understand, with universities. How is that partnership going, and what does it entail, and who's involved so far?
Yeah, we have over 30, I think maybe we're up more now at this stage with universities, and we're doing everything really with them, with the journalism schools. The initial concept when we were only starting out was that because we offer the profile, it's like an archive of the work. It's a portfolio for students. So the portfolio feature was all we really started out with for universities. And that was attractive enough. It was getting students to upload their work. And we have blogging features and different things in there, so they could create content in there, start building out a portfolio for themselves. And then the more we developed the technology, the deeper our relationships went with the universities. And now we offer training across multiple different areas. We do training on disinformation. We do training on AI. We look at entrepreneurial journalism is another area that we would go in and speak on. And basically, whatever the university feels is appropriate for their students, we can go in and cover it. And as I said, the tool suite is very comprehensive. So basically, any issue that their students are facing, we usually have some sort of a tech tool to address that.
And just to be clear, with the universities that have partnered, are they paying a premium?
No, it's all free.
How is this possible?
student journalists are not going to have extra money, you know? And again, as I touched on before, we're not trying to squeeze the industry and trying to make a fortune out of it. It's something that we believe in so strongly, and we have been in a position to be able to do this. We've been given a couple of grants ourselves, like innovation grants, and then we have received funding. So we've been able to do this at no cost for the universities and at no cost for the students. So, and we give every student all of the tools for free, obviously the free tools, but we also give them the premium access for a year whenever we partner with a university so that they can properly make the decision and see if this is really, really worth the $20 a month going forward. Because if it's not, well, then just drop down and just use the free tools, you know? And but if it is, if it's worth that $20, well, then you already know that it's worth it because you've worked with it for a year and it's made a difference in your work.
That is exciting to learn about. I remember I had a sales pitch from a company that offered, you know, great AI tools for education, and, you know, students would have to sign up for it. But the problem was that each student would have to pay, you know, even though it's $20, it's still $20, you know.
That could be a student's food. Do you know what I mean? That could be their food for like the week or whatever. Like, that's not us. That's not what we're here for.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about the future of local journalism. Local news, as you and I both know, is a lifeline for many communities. It's how they're going to get the weather, the traffic, other things that are happening locally that most times national and international news outlets just don't have time or don't cover. How does Legitimate specifically back or support local journalism?
Yeah, local news is just such a cornerstone, you know, especially in an election year as well, because that's where they're going to get a lot of their information too. And with local elections happening, you need to know what your candidates are doing. You need to know what's happening in those council meetings. You need to know all of this. And as you said, the big or national news is not going to cover that for you. So we really go out of our way to support local newsrooms. The way we do that is through training on technology. It's through grant funding, a lot of the premium tools, things like the transcription, like not having to pay for that for a local newsroom could mean they can employ another journalist, you know? So that's what we try and do. And again, we listen to their feedback and we build tools to support them. So one of our local newsrooms wanted to offer their audience audio versions of their articles. And the quote that they got from another technology company was extortionate. So we thought, okay, how can we do this as cheaply as we can so that we can then pass on that saving to them? So we built in text to audio in the AI tool suite so they could do that. And then obviously everyone who's using the platform benefits from that too. But yeah, just I think what we try and do, and I think what we have done quite well, is really listen to what the newsrooms are saying. Every single newsroom that I have spoken to, and it is thousands and thousands of newsrooms at this stage, is different. There is no one platform or one tool that fits what every single newsroom wants or needs. So you have to listen to what they're asking for. You can't say, oh, they're a nonprofit on the East Coast, well, so this is the product for them. Or they're a university newsroom, they'll need this. Even between universities in the same city, the tools that they lean on are completely different. And like the local newsrooms that we work with, they might be part of a collab or something like that because they're very, very similar. But the tools that they use are very, very different. So I think what we have done quite well is we've listened. We've asked genuinely for feedback, not tell me how great I am and tell me how great our product is, but tell me what is not good about this and tell me what you would want if you were building this yourself. Or if there was something that we could fix for you, what would you want us to fix?
What is so timely about our conversation right now is that in September, I'm going to the Online News Association and I'll be moderating a panel on small newsrooms and how they're using AI tools to, you know, do everything they have to do on the budgets they have to do it with. And so this is very exciting for me because this is an opportunity to see how legitimate do they know about it, what services they offer, and not simply be, you know, I don't work for legitimate, everyone of the listeners out there, but when I hear of an effort to help journalists who really, if they're doing it right, they're doing it usually not for much money. They're doing it because they really do want to make a difference. They do want to point out the injustice in the world. They do want to bring voice to the voiceless. These all sound cliche, but if you talk to a working journalist, that is exactly what you're going to hear. So having a tool that seems to help them without charging them is pretty amazing.
It's what really inspired us, you know, because at the very start, we started off trying to tackle disinformation and add an extra tool to that toolbox. And we weren't looking at building a tech company for journalism. Do you know what I mean? That wasn't our goal at all at the start. We were looking at disinformation. We wanted to help people like our friends that had completely gone off the rails because of what they had encountered online. In speaking with journalists and hearing what you're just saying there, you know, hearing that they are passionate about something, it really resonated with me because that's why I was a teacher. Anyone who's a teacher knows you're not going into it for the money. It was a real, you know, a mission for me. And when I heard certain journalists speaking about what they were doing and why they were doing it, I was like, if we're in a position to help here, we have to help. And the more we've got into the industry, the more friendships we've made, the more people we've spoken to and developed relationships with, the stronger that has gotten for us and the less it matters about, you know, we don't need to be a $1 billion company or anything of the sort. But if we can do something to help in this area that really, really does need it, then we should be doing it. And that's just the type of people that we are, both myself and my husband. We're mission-driven people. You know, we're not looking at revenue because, again, if you were trying to make a fortune from journalists, you're in the wrong space. You know, go and sell your technology somewhere else because you're not going to make a $1 billion company in this space. But if you can do something to help and support, and we have been so fortunate. We've worked with journalists in Ukraine. We've worked with journalists in Nigeria and South Africa and the Middle East and then all across the US and UK, Ireland, Europe, you know. But we've seen people that are really trying to help and really trying to make a difference. And we just want to help too.
What advice would you give to journalists who are just getting started with AI tools?
I think get out there and try them. I think that would be my biggest piece of advice is don't be afraid. You know, now obviously read terms and conditions, make sure what you're putting in is not being taken from you. There are a lot of tools that are doing that and they're doing it in a very sneaky way. So just be very, very, be careful with the tools that you use and make sure you read before you use. But I think there's a lot of hesitancy in the journalism industry. And what surprised me from our university trainings was that there's a lot of hesitancy among young people. I thought student journalists would be way more willing to jump in and try this new tech because young people usually do try all the new technology before, like us. So, but it wasn't the case. That there was a lot of reluctancy. There was a lot of, you know, questioning and do I really want to do this? But I think unless you try out and see the potential, because there are a lot of issues with AI, but there are huge benefits to using it too. Like to be able to drop in a document of like some sort of a governmental thing that's thousands or hundreds of thousands of pages long, whatever it is, huge documents, and get it in some way summarized for you. That's a game changer for a journalist because you're not obviously going to go and just publish what the results of that summary are, but it could give you some little flags to then start digging deeper on, you know. But that potential there's huge potential. The text to audio, the audio to text, you know, there's loads and loads of different uses. But I think the biggest piece of advice would be to try it out. Don't be afraid. Don't just close the door on all of the technology because some of it is not ethical and some of it is being used badly. Experiment for yourself and see what's out there first.
I love that. And just a couple of notes on that. You can go into settings for a lot of these different tools like ChatGPT to turn off their ability to use your information to feed the data machine, which is, you know, deep learning and all of that. So that is great advice. The other thing I would say to add to that is, so in fall of 2023, you know, I was teaching at UC Berkeley doing a guest lecturing, and that time, you know, Berkeley was not using AI tools. So I think that for journalism students, you know, who are at these top schools, who are learning, you know, traditionally taught journalism, they are finding, well, if I use AI tools, does that mean I'm cheating?
Yeah, that is something. And that's even in our conversations with newsrooms. Sometimes they're like, well, should I disclose that I'm using this? Or like, what's the policy? And again, for on our side, we're like, we can't advise you as to what your policy is. It's completely dependent on what your own approach is. But then some newsrooms and students and journalists that we speak to just say, well, they wouldn't disclose if they used like a transcription, because a reader wouldn't care if an interview had been transcribed for them. That doesn't really make a difference to the story. But transcription, if you're using, you know, a speech to text, that's AI. So are you supposed to then disclose that you've used AI there? It's so tricky. It is very, very tricky.
It's definitely a discussion that people are now, you know, in the industry are starting to have. I remember talking to a professor recently, and he was saying that, yeah, what do you disclose? What do you, you know, because so many of the tools, I mean, if you're using Grammarly, AI components, if you're, you know, doing an email now, you've got Google now says improve. So there are all these other options. Oh, and the other thing I noticed on ChatGPT just recently, and I do pay the $20 a month for it, but they gave me an option to do a temporary chat, which is kind of like an incognito window. And it says like, okay, if you use a temporary chat, we're not going to remember this conversation. We're not going to pull from anything that you've shared with us already. And we're not going to be feeding, you know, the large language model.
That's also a reminder that when you don't use the temporary chat, that you are.
I think that is actually another great reveal for them. Yeah. But they are listening, it seems, you know, to the concerns from people, the ability to go incognito, if you will. That could be another bonus for people who are thinking about trying it, but are worried about being listened to or having everything that they've shared. So how do people get involved? You know, you've talked a lot about this effort, this mission where journalists are not having to pay, small newsrooms are not having to pay, but what if listeners and others want to support Legitimate? How do they get involved?
Well, we're always just trying to grow our community. We're always trying to grow the user base and get people on the platform using the tools and then emailing us and saying, this is really good, or this didn't really work, or whatever it is. We really welcome feedback. We are a young enough company still, so we do really like to hear from our users. So just become user if you can, or interact with our LinkedIn posts or our Twitter posts. We're not hugely active. I'm terrible at social media.
I think I read a post that you said, yeah, I read that post where you talked about, you know, I don't really want to be posting on social. I thought that was a good one.
I'm really bad at it. I never had any sort of social media until we started the company and until a couple of years into starting the company, because I sort of had to, because I was now the CEO of a company. Before that, like when I was younger, I never had MySpace or Bebo or Facebook, never had any of that.
Okay. Well, is there anything that we should be thinking about for the future of journalism? Any takeaway notes that you'd like to share with us now?
I would love to tell your listeners that we have launched the whole platform now in Spanish. And again, that was from our newsrooms. We have newsrooms that have bilingual reporters in them across the US. So we switched everything to Spanish for them. And same tools, same setup, you know, it's still free unless you go to the premium level. And we're launching French and German in the next month. We'll have both French and German. Just trying to, again, add some more value, because we know that there's very few journalist-specific AI tools or platforms in general. to have them in Spanish. I think that I don't know if there's any. So we wanted to offer that. And then, yeah, we can roll out other languages going forward. But we are not native speakers. So again, feedback is more than welcome. If you spot something that we have written the wrong way, please do tell us and we can get it fixed.
That is wonderful news. And on that note, this wraps up another episode of AI in Journalism. Hope you found our chat with Kiva Donnelly as eye-opening as I did. Thank you so much for joining us on AI in Journalism. I look forward to hearing more about legitimate.net. And for our listeners, I will put the link and other information and details in our show notes.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been lovely to speak to you today.
That's all for today's episode. And don't forget to sign up for my webinar where I'll be teaching you 3 ways to supercharge your LinkedIn profile using AI tools. And remember, this webinar is free. You can find the registration link in the show notes. And to stay up to date on all the latest offerings and my coaching sessions, be sure to register for my newsletter at yumiwilson.me and connect on LinkedIn and other social media channels. Until then, stay curious and stay informed.